All right, we're back in session. The first thing we need to do is excuse David Hagler. He's going to be a little bit late.
I make a motion to excuse David Hagler.
Second.
All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Can I have a consent agenda approval, please?
Nobody has any changes. I make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I second.
What's that? You have an option today. Where are our minutes? Yes. That's not under consent agenda.
Yeah, approval of minutes for last
Okay. I would like to take that off and discuss it separately.
Number eight.
And the reason?
There's some things that need to be changed in the minutes.
Oh, okay. We have Mrs. Swearingen wants to remove item 8 from the approval of the consent agenda. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Of the consent agenda?
Yeah.
She wants to remove item 8.
Item 8, yes. Approval of the meeting minutes.
Okay.
I'll second.
All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Now, can we have the approval of the consent agenda? With these changes?
Yeah, I made a motion to approve it, but then Emily wanted to remove item 8. So I'd like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda with the removal of item 8.
Second.
All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Adoption of the agenda. Mr. Hagler is going to be here a few minutes late. He has a P&Z item that he would like to add. So we'll put it under P&Z. Okay, is everybody? Yeah. Now we have the burying of power lines to add to the agenda. What do I know about that?
You're going to put that under 5C?
I'm going to put it under Sonny's.
5C?
Yeah. Yes. And are those the only changes?
Make a motion we accept the agenda with those corrections.
Second.
All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Now, I have an announcement to make. Excuse me. Curie Beach is looking for volunteers to help with the annual Big Sweep Beach Cleanup to be held this Saturday, September 21st, starting at 9 a.m. Everybody from Curie Beach should be at the fishing pier to register your name and receive a trash bag and gloves from the Beach Protection Committee. And don't forget to wear comfortable clothing and shoes. Okay? All right. Spencer? And I would like to introduce Spencer Rogers. He's the go-to guy for anything to do with the dunes and the ocean front. So there you go.
It's always an honor to be invited back to Curie Beach. For those that, the faces I don't recognize in the room, that for the first 19 years of my career, I was in an office in the back of the aquarium at Fort Fisher. And for a lot of years since then, I've been stationed up at UNC Wilmington. But I work for a group called North Carolina Sea Grant. We're the WET equivalent of the Land Grant College Program and the Cooperative Extension Program. And rather than work with farmers and agriculture, we work with seafood fisheries primarily. But they brought me into the state a number of years back, actually 1978, to look at hurricane-resistant building construction, shoreline erosion issues, and marine construction. I've had the honor of working out of Curie Beach for a long time. Nice to see some old faces again. Tonight, most places I have to caution people not to shoot the messenger, but I think I'm on mostly friendly ground tonight. Fortunately, this one is going to affect you in general as a community less than most other communities in North Carolina, at least beach communities. But there still will be some impacted folks, and think it's important you understand who they might be and whether what's coming down the line it might affect you and your flood insurance premiums. So what I'm going to cover tonight is a look at what FEMA has implemented so far, what the law that was passed in 2012 includes, present some of the unknowns that nobody knows right now until FEMA gets around to adopting the final regulations, to look at what actuarial rates might be and have some examples of what it will cost for better or for worse, and some things that you may need to know if you're in one of these houses that has a risk of going up to some very high flood insurance premiums. And then look at some of the things that you can do to reduce the cost if you are one of those that are going up, or even if you're not. Well, the Flood Insurance Reform Act was passed in July 2012. FEMA does some strange things every now and then, particularly with the flood insurance program, but they didn't do this. This was passed by Congress. In a bipartisan support. It was the middle 150 pages of a 500-page highway funding bill. And it would pass the House without the opportunity for debate or amendment. So it just went roaring through. And I'm not sure they really knew what was in the middle of it. But we're about to find out real soon. And I'll explain why that's coming up quickly. Well, first of all, the only way to really get your exact flood insurance premiums is ask your agent. He knows certain things about what the rates will be, but not everything. And he will have trouble finding out some of the rates on more expensive premiums that are headed your way. Now, I have to give you a little bit of jargon to understand what's going on. And one of the important terms is the FIRM, F-I-R-M, and that's the Flood Insurance Rate Maps. That's the first map that was applied and given to you by FEMA that you implemented at the town level. That typically dates from around 1974. That was your first flood map here in Curie Beach. And the pre-firm buildings are those buildings that were built before that map was implemented. Once you adopted that map, it said anybody in the flood zone has to build at a certain elevation in a certain way. And the pre-firm buildings were part of the incentive package for you to adopt flood insurance standards in the community. If they didn't offer that to you, you probably wouldn't have adopted it because you didn't want to regulate the new buildings. But because they offered you flood insurance, most communities in coastal North Carolina were more than willing to adopt the regulations for new construction. When they did that, they provided insurance rates for pre-firm buildings that were subsidized. That means that they were much lower rates and premiums than they would be if they'd been purely rated on the elevation of the building or what was going to get wet. Now, all the buildings after that first flood map around 1974 are called post-firm buildings, after the flood map. And in FEMA talk, those buildings are not subsidized. So you may hear discussions about whether it's subsidized or not. But they are grandfathered, and that's just as important term and can be just as expensive a problem as changing the subsidies is changing the grandfathering clauses that I'll explain as we go. And this is going to be it's one of the most complex issues I've ever had to deal with in all my career. It's probably better to let me roar through this as quickly as I can get through it and then ask questions afterwards, because I'm going to cover some things later. Well, the law includes a change in the zone limits anywhere in the flood insurance program. And Congress, many years ago, put a 10% cap per year that rates could go up in any given zone in any given place. And while they're nationally set for each zone, that 10% cap had a major cause of the money that they lost, particularly in Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Sandy most recently. The reason that they passed this law was that while the program had been pay-as-you-go for most of its lifetime, since the early 60s, that Hurricane Katrina put it $18 billion in the hole, and Hurricane Sandy is going to put it another $10 billion in the hole. Other than that, they were pretty much balancing things out. So the 10% cap helped them lose the money for those two storms and didn't put any money in the bank when they needed it. Now, the other thing that the law does is it removes non-primary residents from the subsidized pre-firm rates. So they're the discounted rates for the oldest buildings if you don't live in it. There is an exemption if you live in it that it slows the rate that it goes down. But if you don't live in it, or it's a business or a church or a community building, then the rates are going to go up by removing the subsidized rates. And the grandfather clauses for more recent buildings are going to be repealed. And I'll explain that in a minute. Now, the only thing that's actually happened, all of this has been sitting hidden in the law since July of 2012, but the first thing that happened was in January of this year, pre-firm rates that was non-resident went up 25%. Now, you probably didn't hear much about it, because nobody noticed when the insurance bill showed up, it was just 25% higher, but the subsidized rates that this affects are still pretty low. Now, the one that's going to hurt is coming up October 1st of this year, so it's coming up in just a couple weeks, that any new purchases after that date, backdated to July of 2012, will be fully risk rated or actuarial at the time of the first policy. So if you buy a new property in the flood zone, it's going to be rated on the present map, not on the historic rates that have been available in the past. And then every January 1st, for now and forever under the law, the rates will go up 25% except for primary rates in the pre-firm buildings. So these are only the oldest buildings that are affected so far with actual rate increases, and the big change is coming up in October 1st. The schedule change is that we'll increase pre-firm and actuarial rates for any building that's not a primary residence. If it's a severe repetitive loss, and you got some of those in Curie Beach, the flood claims exceed the fair market value of the building, and for any church, business, public building, or anything else that isn't a residence. So those are the ones that are going up, 25% per year until they get to actuarial rates. Now, for a pre-firm building, so there is a primary residence exempted, but the actual rates will go directly to actuarial, and the risk class can still increase up to 20% per year. So while you may be a primary resident, you may get 20% increases even without these other increases on top of it. And the exception is that there'll be an immediate increase if it's a new policy, a new property purchase, a policy lapse, or substantial damage to a building at some time in the future. Right now, under your ordinances and rest of the country, 50% is the definition of substantial damage. The law requires that to be changed to a 30% threshold. So even if you damage only 30% of the building, then it's going to go to these actual rates immediately. So they've already increased 25%. How high can they go? It's actually an unlimited amount under the proposed implementation by FEMA. They say that you may submit a pre-firm elevation certificate, which is going to cost around $400 to $800 for a building survey, but it's not required for existing buildings if you choose not to get one. But you still have to get that 25% each year, and there's no way to tell what an actuarial rate is unless you have an elevation certificate completed. And some of the worst cases, that may take between 8 and 12 years to actually reach the actuarial rates for pre-firm buildings. So sometimes it doesn't pay to do it right away, but it will be required for an elevation certificate for new purchases or if there's a substantial damage claim for the building. And every time there's a map change in the future, a new elevation certificate is going to be required for every building that applies one. So in the past, you got one when your building was constructed. In the future, you're going to have to get one every time the maps change, if you have flood insurance. Now, the way you determine if it's actuarial is with an elevation certificate. That's simply a survey that goes in and looks at a whole bunch of information and submits it in a single standardized document that's submitted to your insurance agent. And from that, he can give you an exact price on what flood insurance will cost. Now, the law also includes, but is not yet implemented, the post-firm grandfather clause repeal. That was important because if you built to a map that FEMA provided and the town implemented, you could always go back and use that map to rate the building in the future. We told you how to do it, you did it, so they figured they should grandfather you in and keep that rate for the lifetime of the building. Well, the Reform Act repeals that, and it says that you always now will have to be rated to the most recent map available, for better or for worse. And generally, over the years, the flood elevation and zones have gone up in severity, not down. So while a few places have gone down over time, most have increased, and the more recent maps are almost always higher than the older maps. Well, post-firm, no changes have been implemented so far. They're all expected to be initiated sometime in the future. We can read the law, but there's still enough fuzzy stuff that FEMA hasn't defined that we're not real sure how a lot of it is going to be implemented. One thing that they have said is that there will be no primary residence exemption like there is in the pre-farm building. So if you live in it, it doesn't matter. The rates are going to go up. And once the grandfather clause is removed, there's a different increase rate that will go up at 20% of the difference between your present policy and actuarial per year, or it goes to fully actuarial in 5 years. There's no 25% of your existing rate per year involved with that. So that'll go up in general much quicker than the pre-firm buildings will over time. Now, I'm going to go through a few of examples in these tables. It's a very complicated process and a 2-inch manual to figure out what your insurance rates are. That's why you need to go to your insurance rate and not listen to me. But these are published rates for the most part, and it isn't impossible to dictate a few simple choices. So what I've done is look at the maximum amount available for federal flood insurance coverage, which is a $250,000 building, $100,000 in contents. It's a single-story building with an appropriate foundation for whatever the zone, and it has no enclosures or basement underneath it. So if you add enclosures or basements, the rates are going to go up. But this is as simple as I can make it, and it's the same thing for all of the examples that you will see tonight. So if we look at the pre-firm premiums that the oldest buildings are paying now, for these, this example, in the AE zone, which is riverine flooding without waves bigger than 3 feet, it's $3,400 per year. The B zone, it's up to $7,000, almost $600 a year. And the preferred risk, which is outside of the flood zone, which includes a lot of Curie Beach, the rates are way down at $414. So if you can get out of the flood zone, you can save a whole lot of money very fast. Now, if we look at the difference between pre-firm rates and post-firm rates, they're different in the way they're scaled. In the AE zone, the pre-firm rates are $3,400, but if you're legally constructed to the grandfather clause, they're only $1,700 in the A zone. In the VE zone, which is the wave zone along the oceanfront, the direction is the opposite. $7,600 in the pre-firm buildings could go up to $8,400 in the post-firm buildings, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but that's the way the system works. Now, one important change is that in the A zones, that the whole rating structure is based simply on the floor elevation. They don't want your floor to get wet. So that if your floor is above the magic elevation, you're okay. If it's below that, then you're going to pay a premium price for each foot you're below that requirement. And In this case, we're going to look at an example that BFE stands for the base flood elevation. That's the required elevation on the flood map at the time of construction. We're going to look at an example that's 1 foot below. So the requirement is up here at the red line, and in this case, we're looking at a floor elevation that's down here. Now, just because you build at the limit doesn't mean you don't get wet. Because if you look at what's underneath your floor, you've got ductwork, insulation, and electrical wiring that's going to get wet even before it makes it to the required elevation. So it doesn't mean you're going to avoid damage. It just means you're not going to get as wet above the floor. If our predictions are 1 inch off, you just lost all your flooring, carpeting, and probably the sheetrock in the first 4 feet around the perimeter of the lower wall, because there's no safety factor that floods. So this is an AE zone. $3,400 is the pre-firm rate at the base flood elevation at 17, but the example I just showed, it jumps from $1,700 to $5,300 because of only 1 foot of difference. In the V-zone, it's a bigger change. Pre-firm is 75, jumps to 8,400 at the required elevation, and it goes up to $11,000 per year in 1 foot below the required elevation. Now, there's another important change in going from the A zone to the V zone that will make a difference in Curie Beach. And that's what's defined as that reference elevation on how high you have to build. In the A zone, it's the floor elevation, but on the V zone, it's the bottom of the lowest horizontal member, which is either a floor beam or a floor joist underneath the house and at the top of the exposed pilings. And that is typically a 10-inch floor beam or a 12-inch floor beam and a similar size floor joist. So it's about a 2 foot difference by just the definition of the reference feature. So even if the elevation requirement stays the same, when the reference feature changes from A to V, you're 2 feet too low, right off the top. And typically when wave zones change, there's something bigger than that. In this case, the house could have been built and insured at $1,700, but because of the zone change and no added elevation, it jumps to $15,000. And typically, you get another foot of wave height, so it's fairly common to go from $1,700 to $18,000 per year, 3 feet below the required elevation. And that's when you're going from an A zone into a B zone, which Curie has seen in the past. Now, one of the problems in the regulations is that the insurance agents get a table that's got these question marks on it that are called submit for rate. So if the building is lower than that 1 foot in the A zone or 3 feet in the B zone, the insurance agent can't rate the building. They have to submit it individually to FEMA. And that's been the case for the last 30 years. That changed as of 10 days ago on September 6th, and they finally published the rates at much deeper depths. Now, I don't have any tables with those on it. They came out so recently that we haven't had a chance to add them in, but I've got some examples showing you from Wrightsville Beach on what they're likely to be for specific buildings. This is on Banks Channel, the bay side of Wrightsville Beach. The town was nice enough to supply a elevation of that point on the building. So we know that the zone is now an AE elevation 14 since 2007. It's about up where the red line is, 5 foot ground elevation. So at a minus 9 BFE in the A zone, the rates are going to be $20,400 a year, going up 25% per year until they reach that rate. One of my favorites, the required elevation is just about above the roof elevation. The chimney makes it up. This is AE elevation 14. Again, this is a minus 9 below the required elevation, so the premium is going to be about $20,000 per year, higher in some cases. Now, understand, these are those standard rate coverages. This building's not worth $250,000. So their actual rate will be lower than that. But if you want to compare them across the board, that's the only way to do it. Another house on Harbor Island in Riceville Beach. Elevation is 7 feet on ground elevation. So if we look at the elevation of the building, it was built pretty firm, but in 2007 it was moved into a VE zone with an elevation requirement of 16. So it's now 10 feet below the base flood elevation. On Harbor Island, there are a whole lot of buildings that are about like this one. And the present premium is $3,400. The pending premium is going to be $51,000 per year. $51,000 per year. Now, the good news is there are not many places in Kiri Beach that are this low. And that's the biggest number I can find, so from now on, the news gets best. But I didn't have that number this morning. I'm shocked. Now, it's only $250,000 in coverage for this, so in 5 years, you're self-insured at that rate. So it makes no business sense to look at those kind of rates over that short period of time. And that's one of the problems with the way the law was enacted. Okay, let's look at new construction and post-firm rates. And these haven't been implemented yet, but for at least those higher elevations, we've been able to come up with some pretty accurate estimates of what they're going to be. This was constructed, one of the more recent buildings in Wrightsville Beach. It sits on Harbor Island, and they can almost see Carolina Beach from that particular location. So there's a very long open water fetch all the way down to the other end of Masonboro Island. Now, we're going to look at the front end of this building to compare the elevations. So the required elevation at the time of construction in 2006 was AE zone elevation 10. In Wrightsville Beach, they have a freeboard requirement. Freeboard is a boating term for the required height above of the gunnels of the boat above the waterline. So Wrightsville Beach requires 2 feet for every new house. Now, the owner chose to build 5.2 feet above the required elevation. So they're up at 15.2 feet. Doing what we want them to do is build higher elevations where they're safer from flood and waves. In 2007, a year later, the zones were changed. This was remapped into an elevation 16 VE. So it's now 3 feet below base flood elevation. Premium presently is $530 per year. Now, the reason that number is so low is that 5 feet of extra elevation gets them almost a 70% discount from the original rates. So building higher above the required is usually a big discount and lowering your premium. So it's not only a good thing to do for storm resistance, you can save a bunch of money that way as well. But the problem is that the pending rate change for this 3 feet below BFE, we know is headed for $18,000 per year.
Spencer, would it have made a difference if they decided either before or after the house was built to close in the bottom and live on that bottom ground floor?
That wouldn't have been legal at the time of construction. They had to go at least waist high. They chose to go underhouse parking, and it's basically unfinished underneath the house now. Now, the enclosures will add to the premiums. This $530 because of that enclosure will just about double. So they're not actually paying $530 because I didn't figure in the enclosure. They're paying something over $1,000. If the area is finished, then it's going to be rated at the lowest of the finished floor. And in the V zone, that's the bottom of the floor slab. So they're going to be parking areas, but if part of it's finished, even if it's on piles for the rest of the building, it's the bottom of the floor slab is what you use for that elevation. So it's not too hard to get to minus 10 if you finish the elevation, or finish that lower level. And this one is another example that I don't think Congress really recognized. This house is on Harbor Island. It was built in an AE elevation 10 zone. They got flooded both in Fran and Floyd, and may have gotten flooded in Bonnie. And by 2000, they decided to retrofit this building by jacking it up. And they chose to build 2 feet of freeboard for the town, and they chose to build 7 feet above the required elevation at the time of the construction. What they didn't anticipate was in 2007, the E-zone mapping made it 1 foot below BFE, so they almost got there, but not quite. And if we look at the impacts on premiums, this was a pre-firm house, so they would have been paying about $3,400 a year. Because they elevated the building and got the elevation discounts, it dropped down to $530 a year. So they were saving almost $3,000 a year in premiums after they elevated the building, that offset the construction costs. So from 2000 to maybe 2014, it's $3,000 a year that offset construction costs. But the pending rate for that 1 foot below BFE is going to be about $11,000 a year. So that's a whole lot higher even than the pre-firm rates at the time. Other stuff you need to know, some of this is can be pretty important in the way the building is rated. First of all, North Carolina in 2007 and earlier, or after Floyd really, decided that they need to replace all the flood maps in the state. FEMA was mapping one county per year, and there are 100 counties. They said we're going to do it all in 5 years. They made it in about seven. So we got a new flood map in 2007 in Hanover County. What they were unable to do at the time was to replace the storm surge model that had been used for all of this area back from even before 1980. So there were changes that were in modeling that have drastically improved over the years that are now available from models by the Corps of Engineers and others. And the new maps are now being used to remap the entire state of North Carolina's 20 coastal counties. So the first of those maps is supposed to be, you know, including Hanover County. It was originally scheduled for fall. It'll at least be the spring when everybody in Hanover County and four or five other states have, other counties have new flood maps released. Now, the models make a lot of difference in some of the rivers and upland streams that are they're storm surge prone, but they should have less effect out here, we think. And since those haven't been released, it's conjecture on how high or low they're going to be compared to what's out there now. And the state's not releasing much of anything. Or they're saying that most places won't go up. That's all that we've been told so far. And another thing to be aware of is that this elevation certificate you may have on an older house, it is based on a datum, a reference elevation that's surveyed in that has changed over the last 10 years. And the magic terms of this NGVD that used to be about mean sea level that was used for all flood maps. In the 2007 updates, that was changed to a new one labeled NAVD, National American Vertical Datum. But that's about a foot above mean sea level. It's not at mean sea level anymore. So that means if your old elevation was 11, if they didn't change anything, because of the datum change, the new map is going to say it's 10. So it looks like a lower number, but actually it's the same as one foot higher in the older maps. And a lot of the older elevation certificates were done in this NGVD. So if you've got one in hand that your insurance agent is using, you need to look at the fine print and see which ones of these were used. Because if you're 1 foot wrong, you've already seen that can make a lot of difference in your premium. Now, FEMA has released some statistics on what's available in the communities that they think is in the zones that are going to be impacted. In Kiri Beach, there's 6 buildings that are pre-firm that they think are going up every January for the future. And there are 3 that are primary residences, so that's not big numbers. The repetitive loss buildings, and most of these probably go back to Hurricane Fran. There are at least 16 buildings that have had significant claims in the past. But the one you need to watch out for is this one right here. There are 987 buildings insured somewhere here in Curie Beach as of last year.
And Spencer, do you know the addresses, locations of those six buildings or three houses? Or?
No, I don't. They're treated as tax form information. It's not available to the general public, and it takes special permission to get any of that name or building details out of either the claims data or the insurance policies that are issued.
So we can't advise these people in advance that this is what's coming because we don't know who, we can't find out who they are.
You may have some information on repetitive losses. So you can tell the ones that have had repeated claims in the past, and there are apparently 16 somewhere here in town.
How would you tell it? How would the count be?
Give me 2 slides.
Okay, good enough. Sorry.
So anyway, the maps change much. It's these 987 buildings outside of this. All these are pretty firm. These can be either, and it's all these that are probably close or in the flood zone already, that if a match changed one way or another, they could be affected, maybe for the better, maybe for the worse. And if the zones change, you've seen what changes from A to B and B to A. So what can you do to reduce your cost? Well, if you've got a building that's in the flood zone, you can unfinish your basement or the underhouse enclosure. Just knock it all out as the lowest rates. There are increasing rates for the size of the enclosure, particularly above 300 square feet, which is pretty small. But if you get rid of it completely, that can cut your rate significantly in the V zone. You can add flood openings in the A zones if you've got foundations or breakaway walls. That's simply a hole in the wall that lets the water in if the waves don't get too bad. And that can make a big difference in the premiums. You can reduce or remove underhouse enclosures. Literally in inland areas, you can fill in your basement. Bring in a dump truck, fill it up with dirt or rock, and that can reduce the increase due to the basement rates. Or you can raise the building on higher foundations. Just jack it up and put a new foundation under it. It can make a tremendous difference in your rates, as the example I showed you from Restful Beach. And in commercial buildings, you're given a little more latitude. You can look at flood barriers that may hold the water back up to 2 or 3 or 4 feet above the existing ground elevation, or even some wet flood proofing. If the building's going to get flooded and you can't avoid it structurally, then you let it flood, raise everything in the building so the contents don't get wet, and make everything water resistant. Now, there are a couple things the community can do that are opportunities but not requirements. And one of them is to join the community rating system. Community rating system is an above the minimum standard incentive program that if you adopt certain things, including public information, things like free board requirements, higher standards across the board, there are lots of things in that list of things that you can do. They add up all the points, and everybody in town gets the discount that the community rating system provides. And if you're joining the community rating system, one of the things they send you is a list of repetitive loss properties. So if you want the list, tell them you want to consider joining it, and they should be able to send it that list with addresses on who's been flooded in the past.
And there aren't free board requirements in place now with the state. I thought they were.
There is a 1-foot free board in the building code that has been proposed for being repealed. And that was actually last week. I haven't heard what happened to that or not. But most of the standards, the free board requirements in the state were already adopted before the building code implemented. About 70% of the coast was already implementing 1 foot or more. And there are some communities that are implementing up to 3 feet already. But if you're a member of the community rating system, 1 foot of freeboard will get you about a 1% discount. So, and that's only freeboard on new construction, not existing construction. But the deal is, everybody in town gets the discount if you enforce it on existing buildings. So you would benefit from the building code requirement if you were getting in a community rating system. And I don't think you are now.
No, we've looked into it. we're working.
And there are also some post-disaster opportunities. If you do get hit by a severe storm, there's a policy rider that's called Increased Cost of Compliance. It allows up to $30,000 in extra claims to bring the building into compliance. But the bad news is you have to be damaged more than 50% of the value of the building in order to qualify, and you can use it for jacking up the building or other foundation features that, may need it. It's not a lot of money, but it can make a difference in some buildings. And there are also separate hazard mitigation grants after every disaster. A share of the disaster money is made available to communities to build, do different things. And the normal choices are elevating the buildings in place, relocating to another location. A while back, you all located a relocation project for the Riggins, for instance. And then buyouts in the extreme high-risk areas. They just buy it up and get it out of the way. So again, the way you find out what your premium is, and mostly people only care about what their premium is, ask your insurance agent and do it early, and do it particularly before you purchase anything, because that's when the next big jump is going to be. And just as a reminder, this is from back in 1996, downtown Curie Beach. When I went back to look at what I had in hand, 96 was when all my pictures were in slides where they still sit, but this is when I transferred to digital. And you can see this was a 8-foot foundation oceanfront, and both of these are relatively new buildings. There's an old one that's still holding on with old creosote pilings. But the buildings that came after this that built on deeper foundations did fine in Fran and in the buildings in the storm that came later in Floyd. So you're not out of the woods. You're in better shape now than you were in at this point in time, because the nourishment project didn't come in until 1997, but you're still at risk from the extreme events and storms. Don't think that you're near a flood zone, particularly in the middle of town, or got you out of the woods. You're still at risk from the bigger events. Now, this is taking a while, and I don't want to take up too much of your time. There is a website that you can run through pretty quickly on where the buildings and the flood zones are in town, and I can do that in about 2 minutes if you want to look at it.
You have maps that you can show on here? Yeah.
Okay, there's Curie Beach. The yellow dot is about the fishing pier, so Town Hall is sitting over here, and Fort Fisher standing here, just to put things in perspective. This is a new website provided by the state that allows you to mark the flood zones. So the blue areas are the 100-year floodplain, so anything in there, if you've got a mortgage, you're going to have a flood insurance policy. The yellow is the area that is expected to be flooded above the 100-year floodplain and as high as a 500-year floodplain. Now, while both of those standards sound like they're pretty high, your wind standards in the building code are based on a 700-year wind speed. So the flood standard, even in the yellow zone, is actually lower than the present wind speed requirements. I'm going to move down to the Fort Fisher area, and you can see that it's pretty wide down in here, and we'll just run up past the pier. The other nice thing about this website is that The state has mapped 5 million buildings in the floodplain. So these gray boxes, that's the museum at Fort Fisher. So I'm just going to wander up the coast and let you look at the number of buildings with those gray footprints that are in the floodplain. And they're the ones that we know will be affected one way or another. Again, it doesn't always go up if the buildings are elevated enough and we're well above the flood zones that have gone in the past. What we don't know is what future flood map changes will do to them. So here are the four buildings of the Riggins, and then Ocean Dunes. If part of the building is in the flood zone, then all of the building uses the highest rates. So these two seaward buildings of the Riggins are in a 16-foot V-zone elevation. And over here, it gets pretty far inland. Most of the Air Force Base buildings are outside of it. Present map. So we're up to G Avenue. There's a low spot in here. It goes across the road. So that's a VE elevation 14. Back here is an A-zone elevation 12. And over here is Seaview Way, is it like?
Sea Lane. So all of those houses right there are all in the blue floodplain?
That's correct. John has that website so that you can go in and look at it. This is not widely known. It's just been released by the State Flood Mapping Program. And because it's got both the buildings and the zones in it and elevations, it's a pretty good resource. That's what's coming your way. It's not all good news. It's not all bad news. People side by side are going to be affected a lot, and some none. So There's enough on the table now to worry about, but not enough to make decisions in many cases. We're not working with builders and telling them how high they got to build because we don't know what to tell them at the moment. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them. None? Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Spencer.
Well, you all go ahead and make the motion for
you. When he finishes, we'll do
okay.
Okay. Spencer, you done?
I'm done.
Okay. Can we have a motion for you, David?
It's too late now.
There might be another one.
Yeah. Bring David back into the meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. No. Emily, did you second?
I did.
Okay.
You made the motion.
I did. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, John.
Sorry I was late.
You were
home.
I'm
still
taking
it up. Birds. You ready for me?
Yeah, I guess.
All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
Hello. My name is Robert Studebaker, and I'm with the Carolina Beach Inland Association. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to keeping North Carolina shallow draft inlets open for safe navigation. And I'm here tonight, I'll give you just a brief overview real quick of what's going on and then what's happening as far as funding and stuff. Carolina Beach is important. Of all Pleasure Island, we got two Curry Beach town employees, John Batson and Andy Everhart, that operate charter boats out of the marina. We got several citizens of Curry Beach that operate charter boats out of the marina. John Brantley, Mike King, Chad Winter down there at the Riggins, his family has the whole end of the dock. And so this inlet is really important to all of Pleasure Island. It's not just Carolina Beach. It ties us all in as a community and a whole. We take thousands of visitors that stay here in Curry Beach out in that inlet every year. And this benefits the hotels, restaurants, house rentals in Curry Beach. And that's what generates tax dollars for the community. The Godamon Classic, the oldest King Mackerel tournament on the East Coast, I believe has generated $1.5 million that's been given to the fire department at Curry Beach as well as Carolina Beach. So it's helped the town of Curry Beach having that inlet open and having that King Mackerel tournament. There's five shallow draft inlets in North Carolina, and I'm not going to go over all of them. I'm just going to talk about Carolina Beach Inlet because that's the one on our island. We used to receive $1 million a year in federal funding to keep our inlet open, and we've been told there's no more federal funding. Dean and Emily went up to D.C. And talked with our congressman up there, and that's pretty much what they told you again, what it means, there's no more federal funding, don't have books. Mike McIntyre told me the same thing, no more federal funding. So we're having to do this on a state and local level now. So what happened is North Carolina came up with an emergency funding on a cost share basis. This is a 50-50 split for money. So for Carolina Beach Inlet, North Carolina said, we'll give you $225,000 if you guys can match it. So here's the players. Wilmington, this was done at a Ports Beach and Waterway meeting here in Wilmington. We're all sitting there, and Rick Catlin at the time was, I guess, in charge or head of the group there. And he basically just said, hey, look, here's how we need to break it down so we can make this work and get some funds out there and keep these inlets open. If we don't do it now, they're going to close up, and we're in trouble. And that's exactly how it happened. So Wilmington was, their share of it was $5,000. Wrightsville Beach was $5,000. Curry Beach was $15,000. Carolina Beach was $30,000. And then New Hanover County brought the other $170,000 to the table. So that gave us our $225,000. We've only paid that $225,000 one time so far. Out of that, there's $198,000 left. The reason this money has lasted so long is along the way, we got FEMA funding from emergencies like Sandy. stuff like that. The Corps would use that federal funding before they would take the state money. All said and done, $450,000 is not enough money to keep that inlet open. I mean, we used to get $1 million to keep it open. Now we're at 450. That's less than half. But we're grateful for it. I mean, it's at least kept the buoys in the inlet, but the way I like to phrase it is they're maintaining it just dangerous enough to where the Coast Guard doesn't pull the buoys out. I mean, that's basically what's going on until they can come up with additional funds. So here's why I'm standing here tonight. I'll get to the chase. I understand that Curry Beach feels that $15,000 is too much, is too high for their share of the funding. And if you look at the breakdown of it, I agree with you. But for the past 2 years, it's not been addressed at the Fortson Beach Waterway Commission or anything. So what I'm standing here in front of y'all today is, if you feel that figure's unfair, let's get the five contributing parties together and try to work out a fair cost share at the local level. Because the message we need to send to Raleigh, because this is why it needs to happen. The message we need to send to Raleigh is that New Hanover County, Curry Beach, Riceville Beach, Carolina Beach, and Wilmington want to work together to keep Carolina Beach open. We need to secure more local funding in order to receive more state dollars. And the reason I'm saying that is because in this year's North Carolina budget, an additional funding source for shallow draft inlets is in place. So there's going to be even more money available if we can come up with more funds locally to match it. This is where we might be able to come up with enough funding to maintain our shallow draft inlet at a safe depth for navigation. Hopefully, you know, if we could come up with $500,000 locally, and then the state come up with another $500,000, that would give us $1 million. That'd be in a perfect world. But you know, anything more than $450 is appreciated on the local. You know, $225 is appreciated on the local level. And that's why I'm here, is just to ask for your support. I know you got some money and some contingency funds that you can help with. This isn't in your budget yet. And I'd like to say, please address this situation, and let's see if we can't get the funding equal throughout all the communities, and then we can secure those long-term funding dollars we need to keep Carolina Beach Inlet open.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert, and I'm sure, you know, we can work together with the Beach and Waterways Commission and even our Water Ports Commission and see if we can't come to the table with them and get a more equitable amount across the board for all the municipalities in the county.
Because I understand where y'all came from in the last meeting we had 2 years ago here, and like I said, it hasn't been addressed since then, and I think that for everybody to be happy, the town of Curry Beach included, that it'd be a great topic at the next meeting there.
Did you set up that breakfast for the legislation?
We're in the process of it. It's basically going to probably be in, like last year, in February. And we would love for all y'all to attend. It's a great time for the council to, you know, get up there and see your representatives and, you know, some of the senators walk in. And, you know, it's a nice thing. We would love to have your support there at that meeting as well.
Well, back to the question I asked you, we talked on the phone. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I don't think the intent of the council is to risk losing state funding, but there's a timing issue. So when is it an issue? So I hear what you're saying, but if the state said they had money, we need to match it, we would work with the other towns to get it. So where are we at right now?
Right now,
what's the time?
Well, right now we're at $198,000 until July 1.
Of next year. Okay.
All right. So if between now and July 1, we have some major storm event or whatever, and they have to go in there and burn up that money, they might be coming sooner and saying, hey, we need some funding to get us to July 1. But as I was told by Layton, and what he's been told, is they're going to try to make that $198,000 stretch until July 1, so then they can start the next cycle of funding.
Right, so this is exactly the issue I talked to you about on the fund. If it makes it to July 1, that's our next.
That's right, if it makes it till then. But
if it doesn't, if you or Layton has a concern that you're going to lose state money because Curie Beach isn't playing, I think the council would definitely act on that. But we're not putting extra money in right now when you don't need it until the next budget year, right? And that's what I told you on the phone. I think it's very valuable for you to come and tell the council, and, you know, if something happens, I think the council would want to address it rapidly, because we're not going to risk losing state money. But we're not going to allocate contingent money for next year. Mm-hmm. At least I would, maybe the rest of the council would. But, you know, Layton and you and the people that track this issue can quickly tell the council, and I think the council can act fairly quickly if there's a need. I mean, we have rules to do that. I just don't see us moving money out of our contingency fund for this when it sounds like it's a July 1st, 2014 issue, which is our next budget.
And I agree with you, but what I guess I'm saying is I'm giving the heads up.
That's good.
Hey guys, this is what's going on, and in July 1 coming up, if the state of North Carolina says, hey, look, we have an additional 100 or 150,000 that we can give toward each inlet, but they want to make sure, you want to make sure you have those local funds available.
Yes,
they know you have them available in order to secure those state funds. So, how can I say it? We're going on active good faith right now.
Yeah, I think.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But
yeah,
if
right.
It's in the budget, they know that it's sitting there ready to roll.
Right.
So that's some of the things I guess y'all could work out. I mean, I'm just here to inform.
No, I appreciate that. I think you're dead on right. We need to make sure the Port Waterway Authority addresses the issue of how they allocated their funding plan, because their funding plan doesn't make any sense. And that's why it's not in our budget this year, for that very reason, because it didn't make any sense.
And it would be good if we could get them to come up with that figure before a big storm hits.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of the day after when they can't talk about it.
Well, they're going to have that money there. I mean, they've got money to burn, and what I'm saying is they would burn that money up in the inlet, you know, but after that, they're sitting
in
the water.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming and talking to us.
And when spring comes, come back and remind us we need to put it in next year's budget.
Okay, and I will. But what I'm saying is if we can reassure we have our money sitting there ready to go, it's easier to get it. Because if we don't have our money ready, then Carteret County,
right,
Brunswick County, or Dare mm-hmm. County would be more than happy to take our share.
Yes, I agree with that.
Thank you for your time, y'all. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Y'all ready to go home?
Thank you, Robert.
Discussion and consideration of committee business. Beach Protection Committee, we have some funding issues.
Yeah, we're going to have the beach sweep this weekend, and we need about $72.51 supplies for that beach sweep. We've already been purchased, so I'm asking you.
May I ask you a question?
Yes.
Island Women has been doing this beach sweep for several years now, and they provide a lot of the supplies. Have you talked to them about what supplies they're bringing and providing?
I don't believe they're bringing any supplies, okay? They're going to be working with us, and they're going to provide people to help us clean the beach, but
okay.
They're not providing any supplies.
Okay. Thank you.
So I take it 7251 is a specific number, right?
Yes.
Arlen, is there somewhere that we already can put that, or do we need something to help you out?
No, it's actually part of the committee budget, but the way the committee budget is set up.
Right.
Council has
to make a motion. We allocate $72.51 to the beach sweep on September 21st.
Second.
All in favor, say by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
So how are we going to work the bags that's picked up?
We've got garbage bags, and I'm not sure. Tony is going to be down there helping us, you know, with the water and the garbage and stuff like that.
Right.
But in the past, where have the garbage been?
It seems like they either put it on the bulkhead, on the Atlantic Avenue side, but they just put them at the trash can. Or they took them to the pier, and we came out and picked them up there.
Is that what you want us to do?
You're not having a dumpster set, right?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that'd probably be the best thing. What time will be through?
We're gonna set up about 8 o'clock in the morning. It starts at 9:00. It'll probably go to 1:00.
Okay.
Yeah. And one other thing, I want to thank Sonny for getting all the signs up on the entrances to public accesses to the beach. We got dog signs up, and we've got.
Well, we got most of them up. We still have some on the back side. We still have to do
that. Wow. I look. The ones I look at them on both sides.
Wow. Okay.
Good deal. Good.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
I don't know.
We'll get somebody in here to do this.
Board of Adjustment.
Is anyone, here from the Board of Adjustment?
No, we're going to.
Okay.
I've got you speaking on the Board of Adjustment.
Okay.
Planning and Zoning, actually. Community Center and Mr. Keener.
At their last meeting, they brought up the fact that they want to celebrate the fact this is their 20th anniversary. And they were trying to figure out what kind of party to have, a dinner or what have you, but they wanted to involve the town council. And I came up with a bright idea. Instead of having us all go down there, that maybe we could do the same thing that we did this evening for Andy, that we could do that for the community center in celebration of the 20 years. We'd have to do the same setup. So it's a question for the council if they want to do something, and the question is it okay to do it here or have the same type of celebration?
Like before the October meeting?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. The October meeting.
Splendid idea.
Sorry?
Splendid idea.
In conjunction with the town council meeting?
Yeah, just like the same. Yeah, just
before, like
just the same as the fifth. Tonight.
Nancy, do you have any idea how much money you spent tonight?
Too much. No, I'll check it out later.
Okay.
We don't discuss this one.
Well, they were going to help. They probably could help.
Right. I mean, are they going to, yeah. What all are they going to be involved in?
What you donated on them.
They'll do the safe serving and what have you. I'll have to check as to where the money wants to come from. From the community. It could come out of the community center. They made a lot of money on that last barbecue.
They're going to spend a lot of money on those cabinets, aren't they?
No, that's a gift. $750 is a gift they've already have and the kit. It won't cost the town anything.
So you just want the council to approve
the idea of having the, first of all, approve the idea of having the same thing and having it here. Now that's basically it. Do you want to do it, and do you want that set, that format?
Okay. Do I have a motion to have a partnership? 3 year event.
I make a motion that we have a celebration for the community center's 20-year anniversary.
In conjunction with the October Town Council meeting?
Yes.
At the first 30 minutes, I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Mr.
You can work with the community center as to what they want, how they want to do it, and help that they will give you.
Nancy, you had a question?
And where will it be funding from? Community center budget?
Either that
or our budget.
Whatever, Andy, wherever Arlen can find the money.
Did they get a new refrigerator yet?
Yeah.
Did they get a new refrigerator yet?
I think they had a fit.
Okay.
All right, we clear on that?
It's the get a vote.
Well, we
you didn't have to say aye yet. Did
all
I say aye?
Yes, all in favor,
say aye. I didn't say aye.
Aye. No, okay. Thank you. Marketing committee?
Aye.
Nancy, did you have anything to say about marketing?
No, sir.
Okay. Parks and Recreation? No? We have a meeting tomorrow for the Island Day?
Yes.
Okay, 3:00. Planning and Zoning. David, you wanted to...
Well, I don't know that it's really planning zoning. I want to understand from the Board of Adjustments first what happened at their meeting, so I didn't get a chance to talk to them. I was hoping someone's here to just talk about where we are on the Board of Adjustments. Town Attorney, you were at the Board of Adjustments meeting?
Yes.
So can you at least, I don't know where everyone is on council, I'd like to come up to speed on where we are with the issue that came before Board of Adjustments.
You talking about the hearing?
Yes.
Hearing was held. It was basically the same evidence as before. They thoroughly discussed the issues, pro and con, and finally decided to uphold the building inspector's decision. And my understanding is that they recently just received their opinion from the Board of Adjustments, and they are going to appeal to the Superior Court. Matter of fact, she called me today and was asking me what she could do, and I told her that I have a conflict of interest. I cannot discuss the matter with her because I represent the town. And I apologize, but she is going to file.
So where does that leave the town, right? So is, I know that it showed up in the Allen Gazette last week. As far as either council or employees request for information from the newspaper, because I got a call, what exactly is the guidance for us where we are right now?
Well, it's just like I told John at the time when he told me that the news media was wanted to interview him and the mayor. The fact that this is an ongoing matter and they're going to appeal it to Superior Court, I said no comment. They can attend the hearing. Get all the news in. We don't try our cases in the newspaper.
Okay. And then as far as moving forward, what are the options for council to resolve this? Are there any options?
No.
At this point, your guidance to us is to do nothing?
Well, let me put it this way. If council wanted to change the ordinances to fit their situation, you're perfectly capable of doing so. But as it now stands under the law, they're not in compliance.
Right.
All that they've got to do is move that cantilever back and they're okay.
And historically, where's the town between you and the building inspector? So this is a question for both of you guys. Where's the town on previous councils doing exactly what you're talking about or what I asked the question about? Providing the variance. I know Carolina Beach and Curie Beach have taken two different paths in that. What are your guys' thoughts about that, right? So in Carolina Beach, a number of variances have been granted by councils, previous councils, all over the boardwalk. In Curie Beach, to my knowledge, there's only been two or three, but I'm not sure I know the history, so I'm looking for you two guys to kind of
appoint you. I think it's only probably been done twice. In that
two times.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to understand where we are, right? So we have a citizen that's is fairly unhappy, right? Mm. Spent a lot of money, going to have to spend a lot of money to comply. And so I'm kind of torn, right? I have two views. One, I'm a fireman, and at every Board of Adjustments appointment, I've asked Board of Adjustments people, tell me what you think about variances, because from my grandfather and my dad, variances are bad. It's the history of the town. We don't do variances, right? So I got that one side. The other side is this specific issue is not abutting another property, but actually to the street. So the setback for fire code compliance, which is what setbacks are for, is not really an issue. I mean, it's an issue because technically it's a building code violation, right? And it should have showed up properly on all the plans and been properly adjudicated. So I kind of want to understand what you guys, you being the attorney, the building inspector, what you guys think long term is right for the town. Because I'm in a quandary. I don't like that we have a citizen that, for whatever reason, has gotten themselves on the wrong side of an issue and we can't get them unwound, right? And so I don't know where I am, but I want to understand right now if they intend to take us forward. Your recommendation from the legal side is the council does nothing, or the council may do something, or where are we at?
You know, I feel for these people, but it kind of reminds me of what Abraham Lincoln one said.
Okay.
Man who represents himself as a fool for a client.
Well,
had they had an attorney, it might have been a little bit different. But the way they approached it was adding insult to injury.
Well, I'm not an attorney, so I kind of on their side about that one. So, you know, I think what Shakespeare said about attorneys sometimes is the way I feel about it. So we're going to be quoting people. Does any of the rest of the council have any thoughts about this anyway at all?
I think it's a shame that they're going to have to change the house for 4 inches of overhang on a street that doesn't really matter.
Well, I don't know that it doesn't matter. I mean, the codes are the codes. I kind of agree with the way the town's been run for the whole history of the town is everybody has the same rules and everybody follows them. So I got to say I'm really torn on this one personally.
Okay. let me tell you, I was at a meeting this morning with Island Women at the Recreation Center up in Carolina Beach, and I was confronted by one of our members. And she said that she had read the article in the Island Gazette, every word of it. And she was, well, I won't share with you some of the things that she said, but in the end, she said, Emily, I am so pleased that we have a young man that's willing to stand his ground to uphold the laws in our community and not just make different decisions for everybody, and therefore make a bad situation worse in the future when somebody else wants to do the same thing. And that's the way I feel, that he has upheld the laws in this town. The state has sent us a letter that has praised him for upholding the laws in this community, and as long as the Board of Adjustments supports that, I think the council needs to support that and just let this unfold in the Superior Court.
Well, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think the building inspector should administer the law. So I have no issues with the building inspector's issue, right? And so don't cross up what I'm asking council. My issue is we have a citizen that can we help or not is one, and then is it the right thing to do to help or not is the second question, right? It has no reflection on the building inspector's enforcement of the codes, because I agree with you, Emily. I expect the building inspector to enforce the codes. That's his job. It's the Board of Adjustment and council's job to decide if, okay, we're going to do something different. But the building inspector's job, which I think he's done rightly in this case, whether there were missteps or not is debatable to multiple people, but in the end, the Board of Adjustment said quite clearly that this is what the code says and this is exactly how it should be enforced. So I think that I'm not saying anything about the building inspector enforcing the code. What I am asking is, now that it's past that point, is there something the council, one, can and two, should or should not do? That's what I'm asking.
And if we do something, then in the future, what do we do with the next person who comes by and says, I don't have to comply because I know
the risk, right? You're exactly right. And I think if we were to do anything, it'd be direct P&Z to do something, not us do it anyway, because that's where, in my opinion, Carolina Beach has gotten themselves in trouble on the boardwalk. It's because councils have not sent it to P&Z. They've just done it at the council meetings, and I don't think that's the right way to do it. Any type of building code stuff. I mean, that's why we have P&Z. But I'm just asking the question, right? So if it sounds like it's going past the Board of Adjustments, I think we would wait until after that ruling anyway. I just wanted to understand what we can do. So I recognize from the town attorney, the council could just say, we're going to change it, but I don't think that's the right thing to do. If we were going to do anything, I would think it would be push it to planning and zoning and tell them to recommend something to us, to look into the issue and recommend it. But I think if they're intending to go past us, we wait until after that. I just wanted to understand the issue, because I've heard different things. You know, out in the street you hear stuff. I've talked to different people, and I wanted to understand it and have all of us on the same page. Maybe we're not now, but at least we've talked about it.
I will tell you that the Board of Adjustments did have sympathy for
Right. That's sort of what I heard. That's why I was
all.
Yeah, that's sort of what I heard, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, everyone feels, okay, sympathetic for them, but Board of Adjustment, just like the building inspector, can only do what they can do, right? Council and P&Z can actually do something. It just requires a change. The question is, do we, one, think it's the right thing to do, and two, want to do it? Maybe we wait till after the appeal, if that's what the intentions are.
I think we should wait until after the appeal.
Steve and Chuck, y'all have been pretty quiet. What do y'all think? Sorry to put you in hot seat there, but
wait till after the appeal.
So I get the big bucks, okay?
No, I wouldn't even do now. I'll wait till after the appeal.
Okay. Okay, I understand. I just want
to. I mean, we wouldn't have to see at this point and change something.
Okay. I just want to. I just want us to talk about it. Because, I mean, it's a big issue, right? So it's an issue to multiple people out there, not just to the individuals. Because I've heard it from multiple people. That's why I wanted to talk.
But you have to. I think the thing you have to be careful is creating the next problem.
I 100%
agree. Every time you make a decision up here, you got to watch the future.
I 100% agree. Right. Okay. Thanks. Sorry for taking up your time. Thank you.
Thanks. Shoreline access and parking. You're not anybody here? No?
No.
Stormwater and environmental? No. Discussion and consideration of department head business, administration, and finance.
I have one thing. We had most of our audit completed in the first week of September.
Nice.
But we should have a final report by the next council meeting. What I was going to recommend is that there really are no issues with the audit, so that rather than having the auditor drive down here from Greensboro just to spend a couple minutes to go over the audit report, that I would just do that on his behalf.
Is that legal?
If you have any questions, you could actually call him directly, or I could have him come to the November meeting.
Have we not figured out a video conference yet? I mean, I'm asking, right? So, I mean,
like Skype?
That's what I'm asking, right? So we have this computer, we have phones. I mean, I'm very sensitive to your issue because porn drives me all over the world. But, I mean.
And he'll gladly come here. I mean, it was actually my suggestion, thinking that last year he drove all the way down here,
right,
and spent maybe less than 10 minutes, you know, and that was it. So.
And
there's
only
really no issues.
Are there
any already know no issues?
Yes.
It's are there clear. Any requirements, Andy or Harlan, about it being presented in person or something like that?
Not that I'm aware of.
No? Will we have it like the week before so we could let you know if there were questions?
Yes.
But you could put it in the record, right?
Yeah.
So like I said, if you want them here, we can have them here for October. If something.
Any charges?
Yeah. I could have them come in November.
So, I kind of propose, if we have it a week early and
there's no problem,
we don't have any questions, I'm fine with that. But if we have questions, we may want him here. So can he be standby for a week early and we give him a final answer after we see it?
Yeah, I can.
I'm just asking, right? I mean,
he's got a new Cadillac, isn't it? My God, damn it. I mean, damn.
Yeah, I'm sure we're playing funny, but.
You can do it
so, yeah, that's what I think, right?
What's
that
teleconference?
Skyping. So do you need us to give you direction now? Is that the issue, or?
Well, I guess as much lead time as I get him would be appreciated. Again, there's really no issues at all in with the audit.
Well, just, why don't you set up a little Skype here and just put it right over there on the book.
And then if it doesn't work, you can present it. But I think we should try it. It'd be nice to come into the 21st century. Since I sell fiber optics and all.
Yeah, I might want to start my next council meeting.
No.
I'm half sarcastic, but half serious. I mean,
can you have a written statement from him that or does he absolutely have to be here?
No, I think his statement is fine.
Yeah,
that's what goes in the record anyway, right?
Right. And it's basically, you know, we just kind of tell what he did during the course of the audit and then what the results were. So.
I'll stop messing with Arnold. If the rest of the council has consensus, I'm fine with him not being here. I'll leave you guys alone on the video conference. I don't know where everybody else is.
I think it'd be fun if we could do it, but I don't think we could do it. If he could just provide us with a statement, I'd be happy with it.
Okay.
And you're gonna read
it? Well, if you can't stack, I want a fireplace to take it back.
Just right here. Nice.
I'll see what we can do.
All right.
That all, Arlen?
Yes, that's it.
Okay. Building department?
I don't know.
Fire department? I don't think so. Police department? Don't think so. Public Works, Sonny, can you tell us about burying the power lines?
I can tell you about that.
Okay.
About doing what?
Power lines.
Power lines. Oh, cool. That's like.
Nancy, did you want to do the little?
Oh boy!
Nice.
Just
plug it in.
Yeah, I know.
Have a good one, sir.
See ya.
Well, as you said, Matt, just give you an update on the ditch situation. Andy and I got together, put together a letter, and the mayor has signed the letters to each one of the property owners that have been sent out. We've had a couple of calls about some questions, but we haven't received enough information from them. I say let's wait until within 30 days. I believe it was in the letter, wasn't it, Andy?
Yeah, 30.
Let's wait after that 30. It should be about another 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, it'll be a week before our meeting.
Right. So let's wait and see what we hear from them, then we'll update you at the next meeting on that.
Do we ever figure out how much it's going to cost, Andy?
Not yet. Well,
not yet? Okay. That's fine.
But if you get all the easements, you don't have any problems getting in there and getting it.
Right.
Well, we're waiting for her. Can we talk about the garage truck?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Dave, you and Sonny want to talk about
it? Yeah, I'll let Sonny start, man. He's got all the answers.
Okay.
So, as you guys know, we've been talking with Sunny Point. They've basically put us on notice that for whatever reason, they're tightening up on their requirements in the buffer zone. And one of those issues for us is that's where we currently park. We stack some materials that we use in water and sewer, as well as park our garbage trucks. We met with them on site, and they had concerns and basically said, you're not allowed to have these here, similar to what happened to Carolina Beach. We're continuing to try to work with them. Our lease was extended to December, but we don't feel like they're going to give us permission to add the stuff that we need to add there, the garbage trucks being the biggest issue, but dumpsters as well. So Sonny recognized that was an issue, and we started looking at where in the town we could put our equipment with the least impact to the citizens. And so I think Sonny, after looking throughout the town about public property, so property that the town owns, has came up with the best of a not good solution, I think. Is that a fair way to put it? Right. So it's the best of the worst. How's that?
Best of the worst. And if you'll look at the, and that's basically what this letter says here. If you look at the overheads, the mapping that I have here, the first one you'll recognize is the parking area, which we call the, where we have the boats and stuff out here. The second one is the 6th Avenue. It's the double road right across the street here. It runs all the way down to 8th Avenue. And the third one is an area on 7th Street, which is a dirt road that runs behind the Baptist Church there, right there next to the, it starts up right there at the, well, you know where 7th Street starts, but it continues out to an area right there at I Avenue. These are three. Of course, we have some property there at Sandman. I didn't think that was a real good option there. So another one's a real good option, but something that we're going to have to bite the bullet and do. The option that I'm going to recommend town council to take a look at, and I think it's probably the best option, is the one on 7th Avenue. That would be number 3 on your pages. You have 2 of those. Number 3 is just a blown up area. Um, It was, it runs, it basically runs parallel to the back of Baptist Church, runs down to I Avenue. We're fairly certain, well, I will say that, we think this is the area, this is what I have outlined is the area that belongs to Curie Beach, and not the, and it's not in the buffer area. We have Sunny Point coming down. They're going to take a, they're going to flag the area, federal forest, and we'll know for sure. But all the city limit maps that we have right now shows this area as I show up here marked up.
Sunny, what about the zoning of those neighborhoods? There's no problem at all with the way they're zoned. Yeah, I don't want to get the mess.
So we'll have to talk to the zoning administrator about.
Okay.
May be a problem. I'm not sure what we're doing. It will be a permitted use. If it's not, then there's something that town council may have to do. We may have to go in and either add it as a permitted use for town use or whatever, or
it's
or
just good to know
whatever.
That in advance. So, okay, good.
So that's a good question. And
what all goes in there? What all will be put there?
What we have in our laydown area is just so it happened, I have a little list of that stuff. Well, we had some marl, we have a rock that we use to for water and sewer purposes. We have blocks, we have bricks that we build our basins. We have water and sewer pipe, we have all, you know, our big fittings. We have trailers that we pick up, our Thursday pickups and also our beach trailer. We have dump trucks, we have four garbage trucks. We have two dumpsters that we use as a transfer station for our Thursday pickups. That's